All right, I am not thrilled about the message tonight, but you have to understand, I buy 52 of these a year off the internet, and it's either preach these or go to the Bible itself and get them myself. And because I'm going to kind of, it's going to be harsh. And I don't take pleasure in being harsh. And it's going to be harsh with one group of people. it was 47 years ago. I fell, got injured, and was having trouble. So I went to a chiropractor. Now, what would you do? Did you ever take your car for a tune-up and find out you need a new engine? I mean, really? It's like, that is not what I wanted to hear. And so I went to this chiropractor. I'd been going to my doctor over and over, literally four times, telling him there's something wrong with my neck, and he didn't believe it. He thought it was in my head. I knew it was a little bit lower. And so I said, I told Kathy, I said, we'll go to a chiropractor, and he's going to snap my neck, and I'll be okay. And he snapped my neck and killed me. Oh, no, that's not what happened. That's what would have happened. So he x-rays my neck, and he says, has anybody ever told you got a broken neck? I said, no. He goes, well, you got one. And I said, you're too negative. I said, that's awful harsh. I said, I didn't come here to hear that. Don't say negative things. Don't say bad things. Say something nice. Did you ever go to a doctor and be told you had cancer? And because he told you had cancer, you got cured and lived? In other words, sometimes a harsh message is what keeps you going. And really, I cannot tell you the import of this message. And I'll tell you who it is for. It is for 30 and under. Might maybe 30 into 40. Maybe it's 40 and under. Okay? I love them. I really do. You say, well, they're called millennials. They're called a lot of things. And I had somebody say, well, don't give up on the millennials. To which I say, well, don't give up on the boomers. Okay? Let me ask you a question. If you had to have brain surgery, would you take a 70-year-old surgeon who'd done it 1,000 times or a guy right out of medical school going, oh, I just want to try this? You know, we have a nephew. My wife's youngest brother has a son, and probably prayed for him many times. His name's Christopher. Your heart has four chambers, two upper, two lower. Sometimes there's a pinhole in the wall between two chambers. This boy was born with no wall between the upper two chambers. And they said he will not live through the night. He is, Gipper, how old? He's 32. He's 32. And this took place in, they've been doctoring West for, they've been doctoring, I believe, in Georgia. And then they went to West Virginia, and they went to a doctor, and this woman said, I'm going to do this surgery. And it's like, they're thinking, you're going to kill him. And here's what she said. I just want to try this. Guess what they opted out on? Okay, and they end up going back to Georgia to the guy that knew what he was doing. And what I'm saying is that, let me explain. Some years ago, I was talking to a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps, or colonel, full bird, I believe. And I said, I got a question. I said, at what point does an officer no longer lead troops into combat? And please don't buy into that thing about our officers lead from the rear, because ours don't. I am telling you, first and second lieutenants are the greatest casualties we have in wartime because they lead their men. And he said, up to colonel. He said, even a colonel will lead men into combat. He said, above that, you have the general officer, brigadier is the first one, one star. He said, the guy's got 100,000 people. You can't lead 100,000. You can't get in front of 100,000 guys coming from eight different directions and lead them. And I am a contender that we should all be in the Lord's service. I'm saying you are. It's up to you if you want to be in. But sometimes the brethren, we present it that everybody has to be in combat and grabbing the enemy by the throat and hacking him to death with a bayonet. And there comes a point when you get past that. You know, your pastor just retired. I'd not talked to him, but before he retired, I'll bet when he started this church, did a lot of door knocking. And I'm just going to guess that when he retired, he probably wasn't doing as much door knocking. Yeah, he got lazy. No. He He started this church as a young man and was in the trenches fighting. And you get to a point where I don't think I ought to be doing door knocking. I think the younger guys ought to be doing door knocking. Okay? And so I want to show you a verse. Now, there is a terrible thing, a terrible truth to the verse that I'm going to show you. And I say this for the benefit of the 20, let's just say up to 40. I'm giving this to you for your benefit of something that that God wants you to know. I want you to go to Judges chapter 3. Judges chapter 3. Now, you know, if you sign on to this, I don't know what you call it, this a feminine Christianity. I got saved, and so now my car gets better mileage. My kid will never chip his tooth on a drinking fountain. I'll never have a car wreck. My mother-in-law will never visit. You know, you get saved and nothing bad is going to happen. Everything is going to be good. And if you have been alive very long and saved very long, let me ask you a question. Are there people here that since you got saved, the worst thing that ever happened in your life happened after you got saved? Yeah. And so there's this concept that all you got to do is get saved and it's all smooth. And not only is that contrary to the facts of life, it's contrary to the fact of the Bible. Guys, I am not for war. I really am not. You know, I hear guys talking about, I really do. I believe it'll take a miracle to save us from a civil war in this country. And our guys all go, well, yeah, I'd like to go against those, you know, those pinkos. Look, all they have to do is destroy things. And I'll tell you what would be the first casualty of a civil war in this country, the Constitution. And once it goes, this country will never be the same. And whether you think the right wing or the left wing or the conservatives or the liberals are going to win, it doesn't really matter what you think, because just before one of them wins, a foreign power will step in and just mop up the remains and take over. And so I'm not for war, all right? But there is a fact that we're free because of war. Is that not true? And so, you know, so we get this thing that, well, you know, when God takes over, it's going to be peace. That's what the liberals preach. That's what the post-millennialists preach. But war is like cancer. War is like a car wreck. It is a fact of life. But what if I told you it was an instrument or a tool used by an all-knowing divine God to your benefit? Oh, you mean so I could be free? Not at all. No, that, yeah, I'm sure that's true, but that's not what I'm getting at. Look at Judges chapter 3, and look at the first three verses of that chapter. So now these are the nations which the Lord left. In other words, he left some in the promised land. He left some of them in there. To prove Israel by them, even as many of Israel as, look at this, had not known all the wars of Canaan. Only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war. At the least, such as before, knew nothing thereof. We don't need a third verse. Let's bow our heads, talk to the Lord. Father, thank you for your goodness and your grace and your very great kindness. God, you are just the best. You really are. And we thank you, God. And there are people here, they've got lists a mile long of the many blessings that you have just bestowed on all of them, all of us. We thank you, God, for your goodness and your grace. God, these folks came here tonight to give something, get something from you. And God, please touch the hearts of everybody, you know, from 40 on down, that they don't think I'm picking on them, because I'm not. But be with them, because you have your eye on them. And some of them are not ready for what you want done. And the only thing that will prepare them is war and struggle. And so, God, I pray for these generations, God. I pray for them because they are tomorrow. All of us got to die at some point, and they have to step up to lead Christianity. And that's what we're looking at in this passage, God. These young people in Israel who knew not war. You let war come. You didn't give them peace. You let them have war so that they would understand that struggle. And so, Father, please deliver the message tonight for thee. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. I have always found that an amazing passage of scripture. Because all of the songs that we sing about are everything is good, I got saved, it's all peace, it's all wonderful. The bird's been singing ever since I got saved. Is that not true? And that's not true. All right? And so we go, well, God surely wants man to live in peace. I think God does. But we're in a sin-cursed world, and we're not at peace. I teach 30-somethings, and I've got some good young men in my Bible Institute, but when it comes to getting through the tough stuff of life, I'm not sure they're going to make it. And it's not going to be, quote this book, chapter, and verse, and everything will be okay, because there's more to life than that, you understand? And so here he said, he didn't say, I want the men of Israel who knew the wars of Israel to train the young men how to be soldiers. Couldn't they do that without a war? But God said, I want the young men of Israel to experience war. I want them to experience the loss of a friend. I want them to experience the fear and the horror and the violence. Is that not what he said? He said, I want to teach them war. Why? Because that is how Israel came into being. Guys, this country was birthed by a war. Is that not true? And the reason we are free tonight is because war after war after war, where young men have gone and laid their life on the line and never come back home to see their wife, never see their children grow, but this country was founded on war, and any country that is going to stay free, that is going to be an important part. And I am not saying that we need to go bomb somebody tonight. But I'm going to talk to you about this. And here's what I want to explain to you. It says here, look at verse 1. Even as many of Israel as had not known all the wars of Canaan. In other words, God is looking at Israel. Now, guys, let me ask you a question. The guys didn't know the wars of Canaan. I don't think that was the 80-year-olds. I don't think that was the 70-year-olds. I don't think it was the 60-year-olds. We're talking kids. We're talking, the Twin Towers came down in 2001. How many young people were born after September 11th, 2001? How many? Go, put your hands way up. Okay. These hands, or you can put them down. We who lived through that remember the horror. We remember the anger. These stinking NFL players who get on their knees at the anthem do it. Wait a minute. They do it with a flag on the back of their helmet. Do you know when that flag was put on there? After 2001, after September 11th. But people don't know that. I bet these 19-year-olds didn't know why that flag's. You see that flag on the back of an NFL helmet? That's why it's there. But you weren't there. You don't understand what that is, okay? And so here's a group that knew not war, and God said, they don't need to be taught a lesson. They need to be taught war. So here, this group, you know what it was? They never, ever experienced the slavery of Egypt. They never knew what it was like to have an Egyptian march into their house and take anything they wanted. When somebody says, you can't do that, they killed the protester. They didn't know what it was like to have their young daughters taken by an Egyptian soldier and used any way that he wanted to, because nobody had the power to stop that. They did not know what it was like to wake up every morning of your life and know you were not free. This generation did not understand the slavery that Israel had experienced for 400 years. And again, I'm not going to glamorize sin. And if you guys raise your hands, if you got saved young, that is the best testimony in the building. But some of you don't understand what it is to have the slavery of alcohol or the slavery of drugs or the slavery of sin. You understand? And I'm not telling you go out and get drunk so you can experience that, because that is not the answer. But this generation didn't know, they had not experienced the slavery of Egypt. They had not seen the miraculous plagues that God put on Egypt to free his people. Don't you think there's a little bit of morale in that? I mean, here they were, you know, and they think Moses is going to lead them out. Next thing you know, the straw boss shows up and says, no more straw, get it yourself. And things got tough. even tougher than they were. And they're going, oh man, this is a bummer. I wish Moses would have shut up. And all of a sudden, God starts wailing on them with frogs and lice and a murrain that kills the cattle. And somewhere, I'm not going to say the first plague or the second, but don't you think after about the third or fourth one, those Jews in Egypt are going, yeah, that's our God. You know, they say that in the Hanoi Hilton, the prisoner of war camp, or prisoner, the prison that some of our Vietnamese, the pilots from Vietnam, American pilots were captured, and they were taken to Hanoi Hilton, and they were abused, and they were beaten, and they were tortured. And then President Nixon had what was known as Linebacker 2, and they were flying over and dropping B-52s. And I remember this one fella, he was right in his, and they had been all abused by their captors. And he said, when they started bombing Hanoi, you wouldn't believe what it did for the morale of the prisoners. He said, I remember a particular guard that gave us all a hard time. And he said, as the B-52s were bombing, and you could hear them, you didn't even know the planes were up there. They were so high. Just all of a sudden, the whole ground started exploding. And he said, this guy is standing and he's looking out a window. And he said, he didn't even realize he'd been holding his weapon, and he let it go and wet himself. Now, what do you think the American prisoners thought of that? Yeah. Yeah. And so somewhere, I'm not going to say the first time a plague happened in Egypt, maybe not even the second time. But after they found out that Moses was good 3 for 3. Let me ask you something. Do you think maybe the Egyptian taskmasters started saying, instead of going, hey, do this. Hey, look, can I ask you a favor? All right. And I just got a feeling, brother, that when Israel left Egypt that night, they were high stepping. That Bible says they went out with their hand in the air. You ever see somebody in service do this? That's where it came from. They're saying, oh, man, you know what the Jews said at the end of that thing? Those Egyptians said, would you please leave? And he goes, yeah, but that sure is a nice watch. Would you please leave? Whoa, look at that. That's a nice ring, too. Right? They didn't sneak out in the night, man. They marched out and they had spoiled Egypt. So you got a generation that did not know the slavery that Israel had endured, but they did not see the miraculous deliverance when Israel took Egypt and literally ground them to powder. Do you know that in history, this is just a fact, you know what they talk historically about Egypt? It is one of the largest geographic countries in Africa with the smallest population. You say, why? Because a bunch of them died, and some of them that lived through that died in the Red Sea. And it literally hurt their census. And so they hadn't seen the slavery, and they hadn't seen the plagues. They hadn't seen the miraculous deliverances from Egypt. These kids had never gone out on a morning and seen manna on the ground. They'd heard their grandfather talk about going to bed one night. Guys, one of the things I tell people, I'll tell you, you know, I'm always saying, read the Bible, read the Bible, read the Bible. And I tell people, when you read your Bible, get out of your chair. Get out of the chair you're sitting in. And get out of the room. And get out of your house. And get out of the time in which you live. And enter the scene that you're reading. God, come on, guys, you're like me. Weren't you all raised on TV? Then you know how to watch. And just watch. You don't even have to be a part of it. And let me tell you where I cannot tell you how many times I have visited this scene. I see a young Jewish father on a sand dune looking at the Red Sea and holding the hand of about a 9-year-old son of his. And behind him, doesn't say they saw the dust of Egypt's army, they saw the army. And they've been running from, you know, oh man, we're running from Egypt, but boy, God's on our side. They come up over a hill and suddenly it is water all the way across the horizon. And they know they're not going to make it. And here's what I see. I see this little kid holding his dad's hand. And the boy looks out there at that scene. He goes, man, he knows we're not getting over that. We're not getting around it. And here they come. And I've often heard that little boy say, Daddy, what are we going to do now? Now, don't act spiritual. I love Americans, Christian. I know what you say. Well, I just say, don't worry, son. God will probably part the Red Sea. We'll cross on dry ground. You wouldn't have said that if you were there. You know how I know you wouldn't have? Because look at the much more minor problem you had in your life, and you're screaming at God, why aren't you helping me? Right? Look what buckled your knees. Don't sit there and say, well, I just know God was going to deliver. No, you don't. And I'll tell you what I think he said, and I don't think it was funny at all. He just looked down and said, son, what are we going to do? We're going to die. We can't get around that water, son. And we're not getting away from them. Son, I believed Moses. He said he was going to give us a land flowing with milk and honey. And I brought your mother and you and your brothers and sisters here because I thought I was going to be free and I was going to be a farmer. And I'd give you a better life than I had. But we're not getting away from that. We're not getting away from that. And son, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I listened to it. I'm so sorry I brought you here. Guys, I'm going to tell you. If you pillowed your head that night, and if somehow you could sleep, and you woke up the next day, if that was me, and I woke up the next day, and somebody said, did you see? See what? The sea. And you walk out, and where the Red Sea had been, it was dry. I always say it this way, guys. If I thought that the night before the deliverance, and I woke up the next day, and the Red Sea was out of the way, and we could walk across it, my conviction against dancing would be put on hold for 24 hours. Just give me a tambourine and I am going to make a fool out of myself. These kids, they heard the grandfather talking about the Red Sea. You know, some of you young people, you heard your grandfathers talk about Vietnam. You heard your dads talking about the Gulf Wars. But you haven't experienced anything like that. And so here they hadn't experienced it. They didn't even see when the Jordan River dried up so they could walk across. So they had missed it all. Do you understand? You know what they missed? The wars of occupation. Israel crossed the Jordan. And then one after the other after the other. I'm going to just give you this, okay? I believe in tithing. Say why? Oh, a bunch of reasons, but one of them is Joshua. Hey, keep your place here and go to Joshua. And when people say, do you believe that in tithing that... That it's one-tenth. Not only do I believe it's one-tenth, I know which tenth it is. The first one. It's the first one. I had a guy tell me one time, you know, Brother Gip, when I pay my bills, when I get done paying my bills, I don't have anything left over to tithe. I said, you're giving God the wrong tenth. Really? The tenth of your income is not God's. Oops, I paid my bills and God's money paid my bills by accident. It's the first tenth. So how do you know? Look at Joshua chapter 6. That's the conquest of Jericho. That is the first battle they had in the promised land. What did God say about all of the spoil from Jericho? He said, that's mine. Right? And Achan messed with it, and you know what happened to Achan. All of the spoil from the first battle was God's. Look at chapter 8. You know what that is? That's the second conquest, the second battle of conquest. That's the battle of Ai. Look at chapter 10. Chapter 10, verse 10. And the Lord discomfited them before Israel and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon. This is the third battle. Look at chapter 10, verse 28. And that day Joshua took Makeda. Chapter 10, verse 29. And they went and fought against Libna, 31, and Lachish, 34, and Eglon, 36, and Hebron, 38, and Debir. And then in the final conquest is chapter 11, verse 5. If you didn't count them, do you know how many battles Israel took the promised land in? 10. And they got to keep the spoil from the last nine. But the first tenth was God's. So yeah, I believe in tithing and I believe it's a first tenth. But think about this. These kids had never seen those battles either. That's the very thing he said. He said they haven't seen the wars of Canaan. So you got a generation of Jewish kids that think the battery's gone dead on their cell phone are a greater crisis than maybe somebody blowing up a building and killing a bunch of people. Some years ago, we were flying to New Guinea, Kathy and I, to preach. And the missionary, his wife had said, when you get here, told my wife, I want you to speak to the ladies. And Kathy, she's a good lady and a good speaker. She writes these, so she does pretty good. And she goes, well, I don't know. We're on a plane. We're flying across the Pacific. And she says, I don't know what to say to people from New Guinea. And I said, babe, I said, people are the same all around the world, right? So I said, just give them your favorite microwave recipes and tell those women not to overuse their cell phone minutes. Now, what do you think if she got up and said that? You know what? What is she talking about? We were at a Christian lady's home, and on a porch, she had a concrete goose. Okay? I mean, what home is complete? If you don't have a concrete goose, see, you've not arrived. And what she would do is in the fall, she'd dress it up with a fall, I don't know, like the Scarecrow from the Wizard of Oz, I don't know. And at Christmas, she'd put a little Santa hat on it. And so throughout the year, she'd have some kind of clothing on this concrete goose. Who wants a naked goose? And she's telling my wife, and she said this like you just found out they got to take off your leg. She goes, I'm having the hardest time finding clothes for my goose. Now, here's how I count value. If I went to New Guinea and they said, Mrs. Gipp, what's your biggest problem in Christmas? You know, I just can't find clothes for my concrete goose. Would you explain that to somebody in New Guinea? They don't even understand that. So when you think you've got a problem, in your mind, go to New Guinea and tell somebody there what your problem is. There you go, are you kidding? The price of gas went up 2 cents? That's your problem? And so they had not seen this. They'd not seen the, so they had not known war. Know what that means? They're soft. I want you to know all Americans are soft. I'm soft. You're soft. You say, why? We haven't had to be tough. I'm not saying that as a charge against our country. I'm not saying we have trouble, so we have to be tough. Because if it ever gets tough, a whole bunch of soft people are going to die. You know, I am a believer that if we have a civil war, probably about half of our population will die. You say, you mean be killed? Oh, no. No, I said die. We've got about 310 million people in this country. I think about out of that 310, I think a million of them speak English. But you know how big this the dam that broke to bring in the influx of immigrants? They say out of every three new Americans, one of them's born here. Now you think how fast they're coming in. If two out of every three are getting off a plane or a ship. And our country is a benevolent country. It is. It's a benevolent country. It's good to its people. Do you know who in a benevolent country, do you know who gets off the best? The sick and the weak. You know, I'll bet you over there in New Guinea, they don't have any 600 pounders in their bed saying, bring me five pizzas, buddy. Let me ask you a question. You ever see the advertisements for the little electric scooter? How many scooter stores do you think they got in Ethiopia? How many people do you think die in other countries, but here they live because they get the anti-rejection medicine for their transplant? Or they die because they can get the insulin they need? Or they die because they can get kidney dialysis? They can't get the... See what I'm saying? The weak benefit from a benevolent country. And if we go to civil war, guys, I got news for you. It's over. My wife she has the shingles virus in her left eye. And she has to take two different drops, one in the morning, one in the evening. One causes cataracts. The other causes glaucoma. But if she does not take them, it is like she puts lacrithin in her eye. It's burns beyond hope. Of all the things, believe it or not, I got a respiratory problem. I would talk about it, but I have to take an inhaler. And it's $250 a hit for a thing. And say, well, how long do you think that's going to last? I don't know, but somewhere down the line, brother, it's going to run out. And I don't know if I'm going to die, but I'm sure going to cough a lot. And there's going to be a point where somebody can't get insulin. So you're going to have a lot of the weak just die. Then you have a lot of weak from the shoulders up. And I don't mean that in a bad way. What I mean is that they are soft, soft. You know, in 1929, when the stock market crashed, perfectly healthy men jumped off buildings because they saw their world dissolve. And people aren't going to be able to take it. They're going to jump off buildings or blow their brains out. And then you're going to have some people that realize, my neighbor's weaker than I am, and I'm a better shot. And so I think we could lose half of our population. But can you imagine what that is going to be? And you think, well, I'll survive. Do you want to survive when your wife and your children don't? And none, but nobody in your family and anybody's children. Listen, what if half of the people in this room right here died and you survived? Well, I survived. Yeah, but you wouldn't be jumping up and down about it. You see what I'm saying? There is horror involved in that. And so these guys, they had never engaged in battle. They never knew what it was like. And you understand, these guys right here, they didn't shoot a guy from 500 yards. They had to get up close and personal. The farthest they got from him was the length of their sword. And they shortened that distance rapidly. So you're up where some guy is grabbing you and he's trying to put a knife in you while you're trying to put a knife in him. And just when you stab him and kill him and you go, boy, I won, his buddy puts one in you. And you're looking around, and there are people. You know, one of the problems with the movies is that a guy gets shot and falls down and quietly lays there. I mean, like, everybody dies quietly. Bam. You know what they say? They say after one of those battles and night comes, guys are behind their lines and all they hear is the moaning and the cries of their wounded, be they ours or theirs. And some of them go out in the night to try to help and they end up being a casualty themselves. And that is hard on the brain, you understand? But isn't it that if you start working out with 5 pounds and then you work up to 10 pounds, and you work up to 25 pounds, you work up to 50 pounds. I mean, the stress on the muscles strengthens you. And that's what these guys were soft. They had known war. They'd never been in battle. They'd never seen their friend die. I knew a young man, he was in Iraq, and an RPG hit, and it hit about 4 feet, 4 or 5 feet away from him. And it hit, there was a buddy of his who had gone through basic training and he'd fought side by side. And that guy took the brunt of that explosion. And this 19-year-old boy held him in his arms with him bleeding all over him and watched him die. He died in his arms. Look, I'm a preacher. I don't know about Brother John. I don't know. I don't mean that you're not a preacher. I don't mean that. I don't mean that. What I mean is, I don't know if you've been there when somebody died yet. I'll bet you he has. And I'll be honest, some of them, they close their eyes and go, and some of them, saved as you are, that body thrashes and kicks because it knows where it's headed and doesn't want to go. But I have never had someone die that I loved in my arms with their blood all over me and somebody trying to kill me at that very moment. Do you understand how that would put a steel in you? Do you understand how that would temper you? You say, oh, that'd be horrible. Well, you know what they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And so they never saw anybody die. They never lost a friend. They never killed anybody. You know, people boast about killing people who never kill anybody. I don't want to kill anybody. Oh, when I was young, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out, you know, that kind of thing. I don't want to kill anybody. You know, I don't want to have to kill somebody in my home that breaks in. I don't want to have to, I'd like to defend my wife. I'd like to think I would, but I don't have to kill somebody to defend her, but I'd like to think I would. Or somebody, you know, sits in my pew at church. I mean, if they do something worthy of it, you've got to do it, but it's got to be rough. They never knew they never knew what it felt like to experience victory. I mean, two armies clash and they are beating each other with hammers and shields and swords, and they are intertwined, and it is death on death on death, and it goes on for about a half an hour, and on finally the enemy just is overwhelmed and they begin to melt away back to their side. When you thought it was all going to be over and you were going to die, and suddenly you found out we won. No, but they didn't understand what it was. Exodus chapter 17, you don't have to go there. But they're fighting. The Israel is fighting the Amalekites. And they're down there, and 1 minute they're winning, and the next minute they're losing. And the next minute they're winning, and the next minute they're losing. And then you find out, hey, we won. We were better than them. Oh, it wasn't you. What do you mean it wasn't me? See Moses up there? Yeah. What's his hands doing? Well, looks like two guys are holding them up. Yep, that's what's deciding it today. Well, we were losing a little while ago. That's because he got tired and put his arms down. Well, I'll tell you something. If you realize your victory came only because of the divine intercession of God, you might put some trust in him. You understand? They never knew defeat. That army that took the promised land buried their dead at Ai and Bethel. They were confident, so confident of victory, they said, we don't even have to take the whole army there. We'll just knock these guys right out. Buried them. They didn't know what it was to have a victory. They didn't know what it was to have a defeat. They did not know what it was like to need God. God is more than somebody who's going to get you a good price on your next used car. Yeah, go ahead and pray about it. But brother, I would tell you, if you think we're going down, we're going to lose this one. I mean, you read some of those battles, and it looked like one side was about to lose, and then one little thing changed. And the whole thing turned the other way. Or we're routing the enemy, and we're chasing him. You go over a hill, and all of a sudden you walk into an ambush, and you lose that day. And when you thought victory was within your grasp, it was defeat. When you thought defeat was at hand, God gave you victory. You know what these young people never knew? They never could realize it. They never understood it. They never knew the price of their freedom. They didn't know that. I didn't go to Vietnam. They wouldn't let me in the military. But I had friends go to Vietnam, never come back. And they never knew. They never knew. So you know what God did? He said, I'm going to let these guys right here have to fight for their lives. I don't want you to have to fight for your life, brother. That might be what you have to do. Because there's a lesson to be learned that way. There is a steel that's put in. A hardening. A resolve that is put into the human soul and the human spirit. That nothing but conflict will do it. And I'm serious. You know, guys, we are raising a generation of targets for the immigrants that are coming into this country. There was a video, and I cannot tell you how this video ended. I know how it ended. And all it is, it's in Sweden. And this little white Swedish boy, he's got his little shorts on, and he's walking down the street one night all by himself on his cell phone. He looks to be about 14 years old. As a 14-year-old, I'm guessing, about the same age, Arab kid is going the other way. And as they're about to pass, all of a sudden this Arab kid punches the kid in the mouth. And then he starts hitting him and hitting him and hitting him. The kid is down. He's kicking him in the head. You see the kid go like this, please stop. He sits, and the guy kicks him right ahead and knocks him out. And then he keeps kicking him and kicking him and kicking him. What he did to him after that, I won't tell you. But we're raising the targets because there's nothing to make us tough. And I am not for war. I'm not for the horror that's got to come with it. But God said, you guys got to experience this. And so he taught them war. Wait a second. Teach. That's the word he used. Then if you're taught something, aren't you educated? He needed to educate them. He needed to educate him. You know, you get a guy that comes out of officer candidate school, and he gets a platoon. I got this guy, my posters. Do we have the posters here, babe? We know what the posters are doing. My posters, they were done by a fellow that was in the 82nd Airborne. And he has two sons. One of them was in Special Forces, and he's now out. The other one into Special Forces, and then into Special Ops. And he, you know, lives at Fort Bragg. And he's about 43 or 44 now. I mean, he's old. Well, really, for the Army? Okay. And here's what happens. You get this 21-year-old kid that comes out of officer candidate school, and he gets a platoon with a sergeant that's 44 years old, whom he outranks. And the stupidest thing that kid can do is see if he can get that sergeant to jump through hoop. Because that sergeant will do two things for him. Number one, he'll make him look like a genius if the lieutenant will shut up and listen to the sergeant. Number two, he'll keep him alive, which is, you know, not bad. But you see, that's just it. I mean, you know what guys would do? They get into combat. Some guy's going to light a cigarette at night. Guy goes, never three in a match. Do you know why? Did you ever hear that? No three in a match. You know why? Because by the time you light the third cigarette, the enemy can see where it is, and that's the guy that gets killed. Now, I'm not even smoking, but you understand what I'm saying? In other words, you just learn little things that, buddy, I just want to let you know, if you do that, they'll kill you. If you walk through there and don't check for a wire, you're either going to lose a leg of your life. Somebody sees something, go, you think that's a flower you can pick, but I'm telling you, that's not what it is, and explains it. Because they've been through war before. And so he was educating them. It toughened them. You know, again, and I don't say this against the young men in my classes, but I see these guys that have never been in the military, and I got two guys that have, and both been through war. There's a whole different spirit. There is something in those guys that have been through combat. There is a toughness. I told them, when they come to my class, let me explain something, guys. I said, you already passed the greatest test there is. You're here alive. You're not going to get real scared about, ooh, I hope I pass my test. I hope I answer everything right. These guys are real casual about their tests. Say, why? Because if I flunk them, they're going to kill me. But it toughens them up. It weeds them out. You know what the Darwin Awards are about? That's those guys that do really stupid things, end up killing themselves. And they say, according to Darwin, you know what? Only the strong survive. So for every one of those idiots that skateboards down a stairwell and gets hit by a bus and dies, the corporate intellect of the nation goes up a couple notches. It's like the low end of the gene pool is so stupid that they, you know, yeah, do you ever see these guys? They put a firecracker in their mouth or a rocket. My favorite is the guys that drink flaming drinks. I saw this one, the guy went there and he got all over his face and he's on fire, and I think, another flaming idiot. But I'll bet if you said, you want to try that again? Oh, no, I don't think I want to try that again. Oh, you learned something. And if you didn't learn something, you died. So it weeded out the weak. It weeded out the insincere. It weeded out the evil. Let me ask you a question. What's been going on in this country, has it not revealed the evil people in our country? And I'll tell you something else. It changed them emotionally. Boy, guys come back from war. You know what they don't complain about? They don't complain about the price of gas. They're so glad to see their family. They're so glad to hold their children. And somebody says, did you notice that they're making the parking spaces smaller? They go, oh man, you have no idea how glad I am just to be here. They understand that it changes your values. And so he taught them war that they might know it. And we've got a generation. Guys, there's some of us, we've fought a war. I mean, for the Lord. Now, your pastor could tell you stories about what it's like to start this church, and he's never even told me. Man, you know, when I when we first went back into evangelism in 86, we rented an old farmhouse in Cincinnati. It had been empty for a year. It wasn't really empty when we got there, just everything that was in it was undesirable. It either had four legs or eight. I had to carry on a battle with mice. I killed a dozen of them, and then I enlisted a retired cat. You say, what's a retired cat? This was a cat that used to be a cat. I mean, come on, you ever see a cat with a June bug? June bug falls on its back, goes like, ooh, right? Oh, not this one. This is an old orange tomcat with all kinds of scars on his face and ears. And he, for some reason, he came up to our farmhouse, and a June bug would fall right next to him. He'd go, oh, yeah, June bug. I've seen them. And this farmhouse that we had, it only had a basement under about 1/4 of the house. The rest of it was a crawl space. I lured the cat into the house. I took him downstairs. I locked him in the basement. I didn't put any food down there for a week. I think maybe two. I brought occasional water. I never went down there and saw him. I mean, I put him in the basement, but every time I went to fill the water, I never saw him. And after about 2 weeks, I saw me a fat cat. You know, when he got hungry, he remembered some old lessons. And he got up underneath that house, brother. He took care of them mice far better than I did. Man, he wailed on them mice. And that was that. And this house, it was one of those farmhouses where if the wind blows and the windows are closed, the curtains still move. Honest, we had a bathroom downstairs and something was growing in it that was rooted outside. And did you ever see that kind of a fungus that comes out of the side of a tree? That was coming out of the wall of one of the shower downstairs. And my wife broke that fungus off, and in a couple days, it was back. She was going to do it, and it growled at her, let alone. We closed that room up. We closed it up. And I'd go 4, 5, 6 weeks without a meeting. 4, 5, 6 weeks without an income. You know what we do? From here down, in the winter, it was like walking in cold water. We had a brand new furnace, but it only heated down to about here. And Luke lived down here. And we had a wood burner with no wood. I burnt my library. I'd go through, you know what a preacher is, burns his library? I'd go through my books. It was easy. I just burned the books where I'd already colored the pictures. But, nope, I'm telling you. I went through my library and I said, you know what? This is just a shelf filler. I'm never going to read this. And I had some slab wood. I had some just a little bit of kindling and I'd start the fire with that. And then I'd throw 3 or 4 books and I'd keep my boy warm. You ever have that problem? I don't say it to be derogatory, but none of these kids understand that. They don't understand what that is. God made them. He made them go to war so they would learn these things. Now I'm going to tell you what to do, because it's easy to say, here's what's wrong with you. I'm going to tell you what to do. From 40 on down, guys, go get in a fight. Yeah. No, I don't mean walk up and punch them in the mouth. I'm talking about get in a spiritual battle. You know what you guys need to do? You need to go engage a Jehovah Witness and tell him why you're right and he's wrong. And you know what some of you think? You need to get in a debate with the Church of Christ. Because you know what he'll do? He'll tie you in knots. You need to have a Bible argument with some guy that thinks speaking in tongues is legitimate and that you can lose your salvation, because some of you know what you're going to do? You're going to come back from that going, you know, that kind of sounded, I meant really, I. And then you're going to get in this book like you have never gotten this book before, because it's not something that your parents forced you to read, and it's not something that you memorize some verses so you get a little medal from your Sunday school, but you're going to realize, I'm not going to win if I don't know this book. Because I know I'm right, but I still didn't win. Come on, guys, do good. Do the good guys always win? No. But you got to learn everything there is. You need to go get in a battle. You need to go door to door and knock on some doors, cold turkey. I don't think your pastor needs to. I don't think Brother Sal needs to. I don't even think Brother John needs to. What I'm saying, No. Ask him. Ask him about going door to door when he's first starting this church, and he said his name was Rick Sal. Guys, you get on there. I was in there talking to a guy one time, and here he was recording everything I said. And we'd have no problem. I have had some impromptu debates on some doorsteps. And you say, how'd it go? I ripped their face off. Well, that's not the love of Jesus. Oh, well, that's what needed to be done that day. And what I'm saying, guys, is all the theory of Christianity go right down the drink. And I'm not telling you to go out there and get in a knife fight in a bar. What I'm telling you is, go knock on some doors. I'll give you an example. When I was a youth director down in Maslin, and I might have told you this, but anyway, I got these high school kids, and they go out visiting every Tuesday night. And back then, running into a Satan worshiper was kind of rare. But now they're out there, but they still do the same thing. And I told my young people, I said, here's what happens. You knock on the door of a Satan worshiper, and I said, they'll kind of come to the door. And you'll be scared to death. And then when you say you're a Christian, they won't say, well, you worship God, I worship the devil. They never say it. They go, I worship the devil. And we go, say back, please, the blood, please, the blood, please, the blood. So I told my young people, I said, listen, if you ever get a Satan worshiper, say, if they say you worship the devil, say, too bad you picked a loser. Why do they want to run Hillary a third time? She's lost twice. That's how many times the devil lost. Anyway, Oh, no, really, guys. I mean, how many of you said, boy, I hope Clemson loses tomorrow, last night, you know? I mean, do you guys really bet on Michigan? So I said, tell them this. Too bad you picked a loser. When I say, what do you mean? Say, my God whipped your God twice. Isaiah 14, he dribbled him like a basketball and kicked him out of heaven. And then whenever there's a heavyweight championship bout and somebody wins, that doesn't resolve it. What do they say? Rematch. So the rematch came in Matthew chapter 4. And guys, this is not, look, don't you ever get it through your head or into your head that this battle between God and the devil is a great big arm wrestling contest. And if it's good today, God's winning a little bit. And if it's bad today, the devil's winning. Come on. No. What would you do? You know, there's going to be a heavyweight championship fight. And they always ask the challenger, how do you think it's going to go? And he'll say something like this, I'll go knock him out in a three round. About all the farther you can count. What'd you do if you're the challenger and you said, I'm going to knock the champ out in the third round? They go to the champ and said, hey, champ. Challenger says he's going to knock it out in the third round. Tell us how you think it's going to go. And he says this, well, see, that's my problem. See, my problem is I can't lose. I'm going to whip this kid. There's just nothing to him. So I want to give him a chance. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Before this fight, for 40 days, I'm not going to eat anything. Because that way, when I get into the ring, I'll really be weak because it's the only hope the kid's got. If I was that kid, I would get on a bus out of town. I've got pastor friends, preacher friends that fast 40 days at a time. Lucky them. I told him, I said, Jesus only did it once, buddy. And you guys, you know what you think? You see, we all get this phony spirituality. Well, I'll bet that'd make you really spiritual. I'll bet that'd make you really hungry. I had a pastor friend call me one time. He was really down. Pray for me, brother. I said, what's the matter? He said, I've been seeking the will of God. He said, I just finished a 3-week fast. and looking for the will of God. God never said a thing to me. I said, oh man, thank you for calling me. He said, why? I said, because now if I'm ever looking for the will of God, I'll know that fasting don't do it. If I'm not going to hear from God, I'm not going to hear from him with a hamburger in my hand. I may not hear from him, but I'm going to keep eating. One of them guys that fast for 40 days, you know what he said, after 30, you lay in bed and your body digests itself. How'd you like at the end of 40 days have to get in the ring with the greatest force for evil in the universe, the devil? And your God did that. And he got in the ring. And you know what he did? Three punches. It is written, it is written, it is written, and knocked the devil right out through the ropes. So I said, if you run into a devil worshiper, just tell him your God whipped him twice. And there's another rematch coming. It's scheduled for a place in Armageddon. And you people who say you are saved, you're betting your soul on who wins that. Well, I had these two girls in my youth department. They were just two butterflies. No. And one night, we're coming in from visitation, and these two girls are coming in, and they are giddy. They are giggling. They can't control it. I said, what did you guys do? They said, we found one. I said, you found what? They said, a Satan worshiper. I said, what happened? They said, man, we were scared to death. It looked like one of them haunted houses, the beginning of a horror flick. And it's all dark and scary. And they went, okay, it's not. I mean, here it is. Lurch or John Kerry. And they said, this guy was scary looking. We were scared. And they said,
he goes, what do you want?
Oh, we're just going door to door. No, we're from the Mass Map stuff. And they said he did exactly what you said he'd do. They said he leaned toward us and he went, I worship the devil. I said, what'd you guys do? They said, we smiled. I said, what'd he do? He went, and this is a little girl, you know. She goes, too bad you picked a loser.
What?
Oh, yes, our God whipped your God twice. He's going to whip him once. And see, my time was over. He was going, stay back, stay back. Well, you know what? That changed their life. Why? They got in battle going door to door. I don't think your pastor needs to be sent door to door. You know what a pastor should never do in a church? He should never do what any man could do. If the plumbing needs fixed, can't any guy play? I mean, not any guy. But you can get a host of them that can do it. But he's the only guy who can go to the book and go to God and feed you guys on Sunday. Let him do what only he can do. And you do what anybody else can do. And you guys, you know what you need to do? Go knock on a door with no one. Just the two of you. When I taught personal evangelism, I'd take a green troop with me. I'd say, now just watch. I'll show you how this is done. I'd knock on a door. I'd say, hello, my name's Sam Gipp. This is so-and-so. We're from Madison Baptist Temple. And I just want to tell you something. And I'd witness to him. And the kid don't know what's coming, but I'd go through that about four times. And I'd knock on a door. And a guy'd answer. And I'd say, hello, my name's Sam Gipp. This is so-and-so. And he's got something he wants to tell you. And it's kind of like this. It's like that old thing you know about this guy throwing half a stick of dynamite in the lake. And the other guy in the boat going, well, you shouldn't do that. And the guy lights a piece of dynamite and says, he says, now, you going to talk or fish? I mean, it's kind of like I said, it's kind of like, you know, I've been throwing hand grenades and I just said, I'm Sam Gipp, the so-and-so over from Mazabat Temple, and he wants to show you something. And boy, you know what? They did good. I mean, had three or four times, they saw how it was done. Now it's time to tread some water, bucko. Guys, You need to engage Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and Church of Christ and Muslims and Charismatics. You need to get the people who are confused doctrinally, who are messed up. You need to engage the enemies, the evolutionists and the atheists and the God haters. I don't think your pastor has to do that. I think you young guys need to do that. You say why? Because you never fought for nothing. You cheated to get to level 24 on your computer game. You found a way to jump from level 10 to level 15. I talked to them. That's how they do it. And you think that, you know, if somebody, look, can I tell you again? If two words, if the word unfollow or unfriend traumatize you, see me after church, I'll hit you in the head. Say why? Because you've either been hit too many times or not enough. But really, they unfriended me. Somebody didn't follow, they unfollowed me. What am I going to do? Actually, nothing. You're not going to lose weight, your car's going to get the same mileage, and nothing, you're going to sleep good. But buddy, I'll tell you what, you go out there and you engage with some guy that you know you're straight on your doctrine, he's not, and he ties you in a knot. You're going to get in that book. At least in our war, we still stay alive when we lose. And you can learn. You need to remember this. Remember David and Goliath? Do you ever remember why he was qualified to fight the giant? What did he say? He didn't say, I've been trained. I got God on my side. I've been anointed. Hadn't he? Hadn't he been anointed? No, you know what he said? Well, you're going to kill a giant. Well, I fought me a bear once. Look, I'm going to tell you something, guys. I told you, I don't know what I'd be. Do you ever stop and think what David must have looked like with his shirt off? Probably that map up there. I mean, you don't fight lions that got 4-inch-long claws without them scratching your back a little. And a bear putting little puncture wounds in you. I bet that guy was tore up. And I don't know what I would die for. Did you ever notice how many the guys, they got like 18 things they'll die for? How does that work?
I'll die. I'll die for the King James Bible. You believe the King James Bible is the Word of God? Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to talk to you about the virgin birth. I'd like to think I'd die for that lady. I'd like to think I'd die for that flag. I'd like to think I'd die for my family, my married family, my grandchildren. I'd like to think I'd die for the Lord. But I don't know what I'd die for. But I'm pretty sure I wouldn't even put my life on the line for a stupid sheep. Buddy, can you know, I told you, you know what you need to do? Visit the scene you're reading about. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to some hillside in Judea. It's night. The flock is just, you know, laying around or eating. And all of a sudden you hear the terrified bleat of a lamb. And you look up and it is the jaws of a lion. And that lion is headed for the wood line. If I saw that, man, I would leap to my feet and I'd say, stop. Put down that lamb. I knew you weren't gonna. That's a good thing you had a head start, buddy. David put his life. Couldn't he have died fighting the lion for a stinking lamb? And then I see this. He kills the lion. But I don't think he just killed the lion. I think he had bandages all over him. He's in there, probably got an arm in a sling, some over here. He's got some scratches on his back. And he's got this lamb saying, stay right here, pal. You almost got me killed. At about that time, he hears, ah, and a bear's got one. That's your friend? You know what I'd say? If I did fight the lion and another one, and a bear got one, I'd go, yeah, we are going to miss that lamb. Eat up, guys. We got to make up for one. David put his life on the line for both. You know what he thought? He thought that was protecting the sheep. That wasn't it at all. If he never fought the lion and he never fought the bear, he wouldn't have been able to fight the giant. You know what some of you have a problem in life and you say, man, this is like a lion. Let me tell you what a pastor called me. I was trying to, he thought he was going to get, I tried to help him. I did, I really did. And he was having some grief with a man in his church, caused trouble in churches. And he came to this guy's church. He started causing trouble. And this guy goes, this pastor, he says, I'm praying for God to take care of it. And I said, he's not going to take care of it. He said, what? I said, he's not going to take care of it. God's not going to take care of this. Why not? I said, now let me ask you guys a question. I'll give you my reasoning. If a pastor is a shepherd over a flock, is he over a shepherd over all of God's flock? No. He's not the pastor of any other church in the state of Ohio. He's a pastor over this flock, right? Okay. Now, here's what I want you to think about. You are the guy that owns the sheep, and you own 1,000 sheep, and you have them in 10 flocks of 100 each with 10 shepherds watching them on all kinds of hills. And 11 o'clock at night, there's a knock on your door. You open up the door, and it's one of your shepherds going, yo, what are you doing here? I heard a lion. I heard a lion out there, and I heard a wolf. And I think they're going to attack. Would you come and kill the lion for me? Now, don't you think that guy to say to you, that's what I hired you for. Yeah. I told this pastor, I said, God's not going to take care of this. He's not there to take care of your problems. You're there to take care of his sheep. And you're just going to have to fight the lion. And you're going to have to fight the bear. You say, why? Because one of these days you're going to fight a giant. And if you don't fight that lion, you don't fight that bear, you won't have what is needed to whip that giant. We get a generation. You know what their lines are? A football team from Detroit. Really? And their bears come from Chicago. We, you know what? It used to be in the old days, people went out and killed each other. And then it got to the old West, where guys went out in the middle of town, just two of them, and they drew and shot each other. And then it got to the generation right around mine or just a little before it, where two guys got mad at each other and just beat each other's brains out till one of them won. Around my generation, it became, I bet my Chevy can beat your Ford. And today it's, my team won. God help us. I'm sorry. But do you understand what verses 1 and 2 meant? I'm going to tell you what it meant. People that were alive died. They died horrible deaths. Mothers cried over their children. Women were savage and ravaged. Because they needed to know war. He did not say, I love you so much, war will never enter your life. He said, I love you so much that I've got to bring war into your life. And we've got a generation that's been pampered. I mean, they think if the air conditioner's down, you tell a kid today, go play outside. He takes his iPad to the patio. It's cold out here. Good night. You're looking at a guy, you may not know this, but I personally sank every ship left over from World War II by the Japanese and Germans when I was 9 years old. So where'd you do that? They're in a creek out back of my house. And I did it with nothing but rocks. And I did it while I built a hydroelectric plant and fought Indians, because back then you were allowed to fight Indians. Guys, we got a generation in this country that does not know war. We got a generation in our church that does not know what it is to go door to door. That does not know what it is to go down and engage the enemy. Only not in mortal combat, just argue. Why do we need to be argumentative? Well, try it. How come you'll argue with me? But you won't argue with the devil's crowd. How come you're so brave to stand up to a pastor, but you won't stand up to the devil's crowd? You're fighting the wrong people. You know what you need to do? Go to war. I don't mean mortal. I don't mean kill anybody. I mean go out and lose. And then come back and find out how to win. And you might be a man someday. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. There are lessons to be learned from war, learned from conflict, crisis, strife, grief, horror. There are lessons to be learned that can be learned no other way. And I go from church to church across this country, and we got a generation of young men. They don't want to engage in anything. They think if the paper jams in the printer. They've had a life-changing crisis. If they drop a call, if their cell phone doesn't have enough bars on it, the government needs to see to it that they do. And God brought a war to a nation that was at peace just so they'd all know what war was. He said, I got to teach them. We've got a generation. You guys got to go out and grab somebody by the heart and shake them and disagree with them and get ugly sometimes. You wouldn't believe some of the things I've said to people. You say, were you trying to win them? No, I was trying to win for God. Sometimes they just need thumped. But I'm telling you, people, one of these days, we're all going to die. And we got a generation that just by attrition, they're going to be running this show. And if all they think is hardship is when the air conditioner went down, Christianity's in big trouble. We need to learn war. Father, thank you for your goodness. God, I say to these people, they need to learn war. And I say, thank you for your goodness. And yet, it is in your wisdom. And it is in your goodness that you allow crises and grief and war and horror and death. You did it in Judges chapter 3 to a generation that just needed to be taught war. And I don't dislike the 40 on down crowd. I don't dislike them. But I worry about them. Because they've not known war. They need to engage your enemies. They need to find out there's far more important things than the U of M or Ohio State. They need to find out there's far more important things than the newest iPhone. God, help these young people to learn war, that they can do great exploits for you. Help them to face the lion and face the bear. Because the giant is coming. They'll never get that giant if they don't fight that lion and bear. Bless your people with the strife they need to be your soldiers. In Jesus' name I pray. Your head's bowed and your eyes closed as the instruments play. If you need to talk to the Lord, folks have come.